Jack Spierka with the Survival Podcast. Welcome to an episode of Friday Flashbacks. After 15 years and hundreds of interview shows, we decided to run them as flashbacks every Friday. Beginning with the oldest of them and going forward, there's a tremendous library of wisdom in all the great interviews we've done over the years. So sit back and enjoy. Whether this is your first time or even your second time around with today's episode, I'm sure you will enjoy it and learn a lot from it. And remember, you can help support the Survival Podcast and the work we do just by becoming a member of the Survival Podcast Members Support Brigade. If you do that, you'll get access to over 70 awesome discount codes on products and services you likely already use. Things like seeds, cannabis products, food storage items, custom roasted coffee, and even cool stuff like ammo and moonshine stills and more. So support the show, get all your money back and more. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more and sign up. Now let's get into today's Friday Flashback. And today we are going to flash on back to October the 6th, 2011. This was originally episode 757 of the Survival Podcast. And I had a community member, and at the time I was a contributor to Self-Reliance Illustrated magazine. He was a contributor there as well, so we were both authors for the same publication. A gentleman named Mark Halley on, and he was a good dude, man, practitioner of wilderness skills, martial arts instructor, Girl Scout leader for his daughter, and what have you. And he had, unfortunately, just a little bit before this episode was recorded, had a true family disaster. Their house burned down. Not completely to the ground, but it was pretty much a complete loss. Had to be completely redone. And this is, I'm going to say, by a guest anyway, maybe not by a news story or something, this was probably the first episode that I was completely flabbergasted by a guest as to what actually happened to him. Here's the sum up of it. They had a house fire. That's bad enough. They were then robbed and vandalized the first night by the contract builders who were hired by the insurance company to board up the house. They had the people who came to board up their windows stole their stuff. Just about all their dry cleaning items were destroyed in the cleaning process by a service master company who then lost many other items and stole even more. They did find out who the true friends were and how great some people can be, but they learned a lot of very hard lessons, really hard lessons, like if your house burns down, as much as you want to just kind of take the little bit of money the insurance company will throw you, go get a hotel room, go to bed, and you know, come back in the morning and try to think about what to do, that you really can't. You got to stay there. You got to watch them. You got to be sure that they don't leave with anything, that they do the job right, and a ton more. He talks about how to be prepared if one occurs, including things like documenting everything you own and stuff like that, post and pre-disaster record keeping. And if you keep your record somewhere they can burn, well, you got a problem, okay? So all of that. So we'll just go ahead and drop you into the episode right as I'm introducing Mark. Again, this was from October 6, 2011, originally episode 757, and I'll catch you guys on Monday with a brand new show. So, Mark, welcome to the Survival Podcast, and thanks for being here and sharing this with us today.
Thank you, Jack. I really appreciate the time, you know, and especially for your listeners as far as a fellow prepper out there to give them some insight, you know, and what to avoid, you know, based on, you know, our mishap. And if I can help other people avoid this whole scenario, you know, that's, you know, more power, and that's, you know, that's all I want out of this is just to help other people out there.
So before we get into kind of the things you've learned from this, just take us back to that night. I mean, how did everything go down? What happened? And where'd you end up at the end of that evening?
Yeah, actually for us, we live in a two-family home. My in-laws own the building. We lived upstairs above them. And I was actually during the day, right about noon, let's say my wife, you know, was trying to call me at work, but I was in a meeting, and she sends me a text saying, hey, the house is on fire. You know, that's definitely not a text you ignore. So quickly got on the phone and come to find out the house was actually on fire. So luckily I'm only 10 minutes from home, and no one was home at the time, but apparently the electrical panel in the basement somehow started a fire, and the fire started in the basement. And pretty much from there, you know, what the wreckage, I guess the firemen do, you know, they're just doing their job, so you can't blame them for anything. But then everything else followed after that, with all these people just coming at you with questions and offering their services. It's just, it's extremely overwhelming, I'd say, in the first 2 hours than anything else going on.
I mean, what were like some of, like, okay, obviously, the first thing is everybody's out, everybody's alive, everybody's okay, nobody's hurt, and then there's a relief from that, and then the reality sets in. And what were those first couple hours really like?
I guess a big part is just a shock. You know, you're just wondering yourself, when you, what are you going to do now, you know, because you never think this is going to happen. We were extremely diligent. You know, we'd turn off the furnace even in the wintertime before we'd leave. You know, never left candles going, never left the dryer on. You know, just as adamant as you could about, you know, protecting yourself, making sure this stuff never happens. And it still happens, you know. It's just a hard blow. And, you know, you kind of have to take a step back and breathe a little bit just to see, all right, you know, everybody's okay, the most important things. But, you know, of course, your items are part of who you are, you know, and a part of that makes it difficult to see, all right, the fire, you know, what's damaged and how bad is it damaged, and, you know, you just start thinking so many, you know, financially, how are you going to take care of this? And luckily we had insurance. I couldn't even imagine what it's like for someone who didn't have insurance, or someone who actually lost a family member in a fire. You know, my sympathy, every time I hear a fire on the TV or the radio, you know, my heart just goes out to those families now, just based on the fact what we've been through, and even worse if something like that happened. And then you just kind of have to start putting a game plan, I guess. And, you know, my object of this call is to help people have a game plan. So you have to do a little less worrying and maybe more action, in order, you know, to get you settled, get you through this, and avoid, you know, a lot of heartache, a lot of emotional stress and physical stress. You know, it really wreaks havoc on you. We're still actually in the building process now. They just started rebuilding the house in September, and hopefully they're saying about January, we'll be back in the house, in our original home.
So, I mean, I think a lot of people probably have pretty big misconceptions about how this process works. I think there's a lot of people, you have insurance, house burns down, insurance company goes out and goes, yeah, house burned down. No, you didn't do it yourself. It wasn't arson. Here's a check. Build yourself a new house. And it's that quick. Not how it works, huh?
Not even remotely. You pretty much have to fight, you know, tooth and nail with everything you go through, every item. You know, everybody's just trying to save their dollars. I mean, you have to fight with the insurance company. I've heard countless stories of people just, you know, having to get a lawyer against your insurance company, which you have a contract that, you know, binds them to, you know, you need to cover us for the stuff, and, you know, seeking out the attorney general, and it's on and on. It's just, people are just fighting to hold on to their dollars, and you have to fight back to make sure they pay for it.
You know, and I think there's a lot to be learned here about insurance and you know, reconciling a claim. And I think that for you it's going to pertain directly to fire because that's what you went through. But there's a lot of other things that could completely wipe out, destroy a house and destroy everything in it. And they'd have to go through the same thing. So I think this is also a universal topic with anything that would destroy your home. And unfortunately, there's more than one thing that can do that to us. But what are some of the things that you think you should do before a fire? Or any situation where you can lose your entire home, whether it's a storm or flooding or anything, to prepare yourself for the situation. Because we all have to accept the fact that even if, like you, we're diligent, we do what we're supposed to do, that we could have this happen anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a little checklist I'll just read through, you know, that I started putting together for people. And basically, you know, just have yourself an escape plan. Luckily for us, it was during the day, but, you know, I've heard stories of a lot of times it happens at night when people are home. And it's not exactly the fire or the smoke that kills you. It's actually the toxins in the smoke, you know, from what I've gathered speaking with a lot of people, that'll take you down first. So it's not even necessarily the heat or the flames. And it gets hot in the house. Our basement was probably 3,000 degrees. And on the second floor, they're probably hit like about 1,000 degrees. I mean, you definitely see like, you know, plastic shrinkage and stuff like that. So your escape plan, practice it with kids, make sure they know what's going on, you know, make sure they can get out. And then also inspect your fire protection alarm and equipment regularly. Your sprinkler systems, fire extinguishers, smoke detectors. I mean, we live in a city, so it's a little different. You know, the firemen can get there quickly. For those that don't, I guess kind of have a plan is what can you do to put your fire out? Because if you're waiting on the voluntary fire department, your house will be gone by the time they even get there because it just happens so fast. Security. Place all your important insurance information, documents, currency, and valuables in a fire and waterproof safe. Luckily, that saved me quite a bit. My firearms were in a fireproof safe, and my important valuables were in a fireproof safe, and everything in there is unscathed. So spending the money up front on a top-notch safe is worth it in the end. Your inventory, that's a big part of what the insurance looks for, is what you had in the home, and the more documentation you have for that, the easier and the quicker the process goes and the claim goes. So make sure you inventory your household items. Start one room, go room to room, what's in there, and it's amazing how fast everything adds up. You think you have, you know, $80,000 worth of property, and you almost have to double it by the time you're done because there's just so many little items. You know, you buy stuff every year, every month you go shopping, all those things add up. And they actually have companies out there. I think one of them is called Neat Receipts, where you can actually scan in your receipts and inventories all that for you, categorize it. You know, really helps because, as we know, all the thermal receipts now last about a month and they're gone. So you definitely want to make copies of those, not just have the originals, because by the time you need them, they'll disappear and there'll be nothing on it. Your account information. Keep current emergency lists of every account you have, you know, including home bills, loan accounts, magazine subscriptions, family members, even if it's a spreadsheet. Put it on a spreadsheet so when you need to change your address because you're going to be temporarily living somewhere else, even if it's a flood, fire, or even if it's a bad enough theft, you know, it can happen. You want your information so that way you can contact these people and you don't have to try to guess, all right, what's this, how do I get hold of this magazine, how do I get this bill changed? And list all your bills and the respective due dates also, because bills every month come in, regardless of what your status is, people want their money. And you got to make sure, you know, you're able to contact those people, let them know the situation. And we've been, and as far as like companies understanding, people have been very understandable as far as, you know, having a house fire. They sympathize with you. They try to do what they can for you. List all your medications and all your doctors, because if the house burns, all your medicine's in there. And some people need their medicine 3-4 times a day. You want to make sure you can get that information out right away. Legal contact information. Make sure you have some sort of legal advice, you have the Attorney General's number. In case this does happen, you're able to contact the right people. You can get the ball rolling faster. You're not looking for any legal advice or a lawyer. You already have a name ready to go, especially someone who specializes in this kind of thing, because there are mediators out there that handle this stuff. And a lot of times it doesn't even go to court. It's just once they send a letter to your insurance company, the ball gets rolling. Contractors. There's plenty of restoration contractors out there. Builders, people who might need to rebuild your home, demolition experts, dry cleaners, and security, which, you know, is a huge, huge thing you don't even think of. There's so many fire cases out there. You know, criminals listen to police scanners. They listen to the news. Hey, there's a fire there. That night, they're at your home trying to steal what they can out of it, steal the copper piping and all that stuff. They definitely go to a whole new level, you know, from this experience I've seen. So you get to be ready for that, even if you have to have a name of security company or have some friends sit in the driveway with their shotgun waiting for anybody to show up. You know, you do what needs to get done. Don't put anybody's life at risk, but you want to make sure presence is there so that, you know, to distract any of the not so innocent people. Your 72-hour bag or your bug-out bag, make sure it's in your car. I got caught with this one. I took it out of the car to update it, and lo and behold, whatever I was wearing to work that day, that's all I had on me. So even if you get a pair of underwear and a candy bar, stick it in a Ziploc and put it in your car, because whatever you left with that day or whatever you leave out of the house wearing, that's what you have. So make sure you have your bug-out bag in your car at all times, no matter what. Even if you're updating it, put it right back in there. Security services, there's plenty of contractors out there. You can just have somebody's name and number handy. So if you, we ended up having the police after the first night, which is a little late now, but they sat in our driveway, you know, making sure nobody else tried to enter the home after they boarded it up. and storing your seasonal clothes, like your hunting equipment. A lot of times, especially with, I guess, the firemen come in with the house doesn't completely burn, they fill your house with water. It is amazing how much water they can pump into these, you know, from these machines, and you have a couple feet of water in your basement. And if that's where you store your stuff or whatever floor it's in, we had bedrooms that were just completely soaked. Store them in like a sealed plastic bag and in a plastic bin, so that way at least they'll float, they'll be away from the water, and if there's just smoke damage in your home, they'll protect it from there. It's a lot cheaper to just replace, you know, a $5 Walmart plastic bin, a garbage bag, than all your items that were in there. And I guess kind of sums it up for the trying to stay ahead of it.
Wow, just a tremendous number of things that I think most people just wouldn't think of. I think that some of the big things I've taken from this that we're doing right for not maybe this reason, but they kind of overlap, is, you know, we keep quite a few the items as far as extra clothing and kind of a contingency put together in our RV instead of, like, having everything come out of there and come inside the house, where at least if we lost the house, we still have that. And then your 72-hour kit, was it, did you, when you took it out of your car to go through it, did you have it actually in the home?
Yep, it was in the home.
Ooh. That hurts, huh?
It really, really stings, you know. So from now on, definitely it'll be in the car.
Wow. And you guys were robbed by the people that came to board the house up?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way of proving it, because by the time they got there, actually, when they showed up, the demolition team, I can't remember their name, some vendor, third-party vendor that they brought in from another state to board up the house. And actually, when they showed up, their box truck scratched my father-in-law's truck, you know, coming in. So that, you know, that was the whole starting point of that. And they were in the home for about 10 hours. They didn't leave till about 4:30 in the morning. And, you know, I had left probably around 9 o'clock, take care of the kids. I guess, you know, you hire someone, you assume, you know, that they're going to do a good job. They do what they're supposed to do. And then so they boarded everything up, locked the doors. You'll put padlocks actually on the doors, you know, so no one could get in, no forced entry or anything. Then coming back home the next morning and seeing, you know, your apartment just completely, completely just destroyed. It looked like a tornado went through the home. It was just, that upset me more than the house burning, you know, because that, at that point, it's just somebody just treading on your property, just violating, you know, your life.
Well, yeah, of course it does, because the fire is a fire. It's an inanimate object. Fire, we can actually make a case for it. It acts like a living thing, but it doesn't have a mind or a thought process. It doesn't do it with the intent of harm, and it certainly doesn't understand it's doing harm. Human beings who come in and do a job like that, especially in that business, where you know you're coming in to do this for someone that just was a victim of a fire, is a special low form of life. And I got to say, you're a better man than me, because there might be, you know, I might be in jail if somebody did that to me. I mean, you probably had to exercise a lot of self-control and think, got to do the right thing to family, to not go after those guys, I guess, even if you could have found them.
Absolutely, you know, and that's a big part of it. It's like, you know, you're kind of stuck. You can't really prove it, because nobody saw them do it, but they were the last ones in, the last ones out. It's kind of obvious, you know, when you see stuff, you know, that was on the porch and taken into the house and rifled through, you kind of know that. You know, they had plenty of time. You know, my dad's done construction for most of his life, and it doesn't take 10 hours, you know, to put boards on a window.
No. I've seen people drywall a house in 10 hours.
Right, exactly.
Literally. So I don't buy that. And I also think that it's probably the typical criminal scum mindset of, oh, they're getting the insurance money anyway. You know, but what a low form of life. Let's go on before I go into a Jack rant. Once this has happened, and so you got insurance, but you know, you're a year without a house. Your whole life is disrupted. Kids still got to go to school. Parents still got to go to work. Bills still got to be paid, and somewhere you got to find a roof. Who can you turn to for assistance when you're dealing with a situation like this?
Yeah, there's actually quite a few people. I mean, having a place to stay, or, you know, a name of a close family member, you know, for us is kind of, my family is all local, so it's pretty easy for us to find something. But usually your insurance companies, they offer, you know, they can put you in a hotel right away first night, you know, if need be. They have things like that. And while you're not at home anymore, they put you in temporary housing, fully furnished, so they'll find an apartment. and they'll furnish it for you, you know, and that's pretty much everything except, you know, your personal items. They put everything in the kitchen, utensils. So whatever you need, you know, they furnish that for you. And there's time limits, though. They give you up to 2 years, basically, for your house to get rebuilt and whatnot. So up front, finding a place, you know, we thought about going to a hotel, but then you're eating out all the time, and it's just cost-effective. It's just too much. Where being at a relative's or a friend's house, you know, we were able to have, you know, someone babysit the children while we were out taking care of the home and take care of other issues, you know, and that played a huge, huge benefit as far as, you know, getting things done early.
Did you eventually, though, did they provide you like a rent house or something like that? Is that what you did long term?
Yes, currently we're in a, we're still in the city. They found us, we found a rental apartment, and, you know, they furnished it for us. So we're pretty much just waiting here until they finish the house and then we move back.
Okay, okay. Any other groups that maybe were helpful with just piecing everything back together?
Yep, actually, yeah, the local Red Cross was awesome. You know, they showed up. They gave us all like a kind of like a little bag that had toothbrush, soap, face cloth. And then actually later on in that day, we actually went to the local Red Cross, and they provided you with like a change of clothing. You know, they're all donated items. They give the kids like a stuffed animal, and they also give you some financial assistance if you need it up front. And that was, I'd say, one of the most helpful things we had the whole time. It really, you know, made an impact, and it really helped us out.
How about neighbors and community and all? Have there been people that have been reached out to help you that way?
Oh, absolutely. We've had, we've had the greatest of people and the worstest of people in this instance. Neighbors, you know, living in the city, like you always say, you don't really know them. And honestly, I met them by name for the first time while the house was on fire. You know, they were very good, very sympathetic, you know, offering whatever we needed, use their bathroom, you know, offering places to stay. You know, people are definitely out there, you know, trying to help as much as they can. And it's tough, you know, you got to kind of put your pride aside and say, all right, you know, we need help, and we can't just, you know, we'll take care of it, or we'll find something else to do, especially when your kids are involved. You kind of just have to, you know, accept a little humiliation and just, okay, you know, take the help. You know, it'll make life a little easier, make a little bit less worry for you. And then we've had friends that just went around soliciting, like, businesses to get, you know, like, free meals at McDonald's or gift cards to restaurants and things like that. So there have been some awesome, awesome people out there helping out. And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, letting people know what happened. Because a lot of times people, they'll be mad at you if they find out a week later that they didn't know. So you kind of just have to spread the word, let people spread the word, you know, and just take whatever assistance you can get and, you know, offer them. Even if it's something simple, hey, can you wash this, you know, load of laundry for me? You know, that's remarkably helpful because at first you don't have any place. All your normal day-to-day stuff has changed. It's kind of like being in a raw situation. You're just thrown out there and you have nothing. So now you got to kind of figure out how do you take care of yourself, how do you take care of your family, and, you know, how do you get through the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, and I imagine also things like that load of laundry at one time may have represented 10% of your family's clothing and now may represent 95% of your family's clothing.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's amazing how fast that shrinks and stuff. Like I said, the dry cleaning was just, you know, a whole horror story on its own where it all comes back, I'd say 90% of it, and it just doesn't even fit. Because on the second floor, for us, it was mostly smoke damage.
Yeah.
So, you know, smoke, I mean, you have a closed box, you know, and the smoke is still inside there. It is amazing where it creeps in.
Wow. Wow. Are there some things you would recommend people not do that might make the situation worse once you're dealing with it?
As far as, like, as the house fire goes, I guess having your information ready in the beginning. Literally, we had three different vendors offering their restoration services while the house was still burning. I'd say within an hour, they're there. They're listening to the scanners. I understand they're just trying to do their job, but, you know, the biggest thing you fall for is that, you know, they try to make you feel good. We'll take care of it. You know, we'll make sure everything's all right. We'll take care of your stuff. We'll get it out of here quickly, clean it quickly. And it's just the absolute opposite, you know, with our experience in dealing with these companies. And the biggest thing to do is just, you know, politely take their card, tell them you'll contact them if they need them and whatnot. If you don't have anybody, you know, you've planned in advance or spoke to, referrals, you know, everybody out there is going to have some good referrals, but, you know, you got to look at the majority, I guess, and really do your research and who's good locally and who's not.
And your kiddos, you've got two kids, is that right?
Three. Girls and a boy.
Two girls and a boy. So how old are they?
They are, let me see, 12, 11, and 6.
See, I got one. I always know how old he is. With kids of that varying age, you've got kind of like the preteen with the you know, the typical preteen attitude. You've got the really little kid that gets easily scared. I mean, how have they dealt with this, and what kind of conversations have you had to have with them to make them realize, yeah, this really sucks and you lost everything, but it's going to be okay? I mean, kids are generally pretty resilient, but what have you learned in interacting with your children through this?
Yeah, they're definitely, you know, luckily that the resiliency is there in children. You know, at first it was very difficult for them because pretty much everything they own, all their toys, everything that's, you know, their biggest parts of life, you know, is what they own. You know, all that stuff is kind of gone up front. So, you know, it's hard to cushion them. You know, say, all right, you know, you can't get that stuff back. You know, we can replace it, but, you know, everything can't happen at once. So it was definitely, you know, emotional for them. They had a hard time for a few weeks, you know, just to get past it. You know, they missed the house. And, you know, even to this day, they still like, you know, we missed the house. But I guess they're kind of, you know, they got adjusted to being where we're at now. And luckily, they were in, like, a little apartment community where there's tons of kids, you know, and they've had the experience to just play with these kids, and it really helps take their mind off it, and, you know, it gives them, like, I guess, another sense of adventure, and, you know, it's exciting for them a little bit now, but definitely, you know, it constantly just, you know, reassuring them it's going to be okay, nobody's hurt. You know, we only had a couple of hermit crabs that we lost, so, you know, we didn't lose any major pets that they were attached to, and, you know, and that helps a little bit, but it's just staying with them, you know, just consoling them, just letting them know it's going to be okay, giving them, you know, hugs and kisses. You know, as proud as you are, or as tough as you are, you know, that's just what it comes down to. You gotta come down to their level and emotionally be there for them.
And like this rent house that they got, your rental apartment, were you able to at least keep them like in the same school district? Because I mean, that'd be another thing to be, you know, told you have to go to a different school.
Yeah, our kids, we send them to a private school or a Catholic school. So
okay, so I didn't really.
It hasn't been a huge issue, but usually there's plenty of apartments throughout the city. We probably looked at a good 6 of them before we settled on this one. And I think mostly we took it because it had a large basement, so as we got stuff back from the cleaners, we had a place to put it. And so, yeah, the district was an issue, but I think being in the city, you could easily find something. If you, a lot of places, if you live like out where you have a couple acres or something, the insurance company will actually, you know, if you want to bring, you know, truck over a mobile home where you could stay in while during the whole rebuilding process. So at least, you know, you're not too far away. You're still living on your own property. You have a place to stay, you know, that's fully furnished for you. So you can maintain, you know, being in the same school district, same area and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess that would be ideal. It's probably the route I would go in my situation, not for kids, but just to be near my home. Because it sounds to me like once this happens and you're thinking, okay, well, at least the fire department's here and the contractors are here and all, if something is being done at your home, you should probably be there. Even the first night when guys are there to board it up. I mean, sure, if you had it to do again, you would have probably been standing out there, probably if you could have got away with it with an AR on your back, watching these guys board up your house.
Absolutely. I think if I was there the first night, there would have been some bodies flying through the windows. You know, if I would have known that, my martial arts experience would have definitely come in handy. Yeah. And you probably seen some naked guys running down the street if I had my way. But yeah, which pretty much brings me, I guess, to my first 24 hours list, kind of create a little list of what to do in the first 24 hours. One of the most important things is, you know, let the firemen do their job. They are going to smash every window, every door, cut a hole in the roof, and cut a hole in each floor to do what they need to do to get the smoke out of the house so they can get in there and assess the situation. So you have glass everywhere. You have water coming in through the roof. You know, you have water just pouring into the basement. And, you know, they just do what they have to do, and you have to accept that. You know, I guess that's part of the initial shock, because you go in there, it's like, wow, the firemen just destroyed this place. But, you know, it's their job. You know, they have to be safe. And, you know, and that's totally respected. And luckily, some of the firemen there were actually friends of ours, so, you know, that definitely helped out a bit. They were able, you know, to give us a little assistance, a little help, tell us, you know, what we need to do.
Yeah, I guess another thing with that, too, that people need to understand is, like, when they're poking holes in your roof and all, not just to be safe, but once your house is engulfed, it's pretty well, it's not going to come out the other side in good shape, period. And one of their other goals is they're there to prevent that fire from leaping to the next house. So they have to take some pretty drastic measures.
Absolutely, especially when the neighbors are only like, you know, 25 feet away, you know, living in the crowded city. So that next house is pretty close by. You know, and our house was only about 25 years old, where the neighbor's house was like 150 years old. So you can imagine how fast, you know, they were burned down just by a couple sparks flying over to their side of the road. And I guess as far as what to do immediately, you know, we got the okay from the fireman. Okay, you can go in. You know, the firemen are more than happy. If there's something you need, you can tell them exactly where it is, and they'll go get it for you. You know, so if there's some items you don't want to go in there for whatever reasons, because your shoes will get just covered in glass, your clothes will smell like they've never smelled before, and it's just like, it's still, even after all the smoke's gone, it's still hard to breathe because the smell and the smoke smell and the toxins are just still in the air. And so you want to remove any immediate items like firearms, jewelry, personal documents, photos. And luckily I have enough sense to take those items out because I just, you know, they're valuable, and you want to make sure those don't get into the wrong hands, because once firearms get stolen, that's a whole nother issue. The police need to get involved. You know, you need serial numbers and stuff like that, which makes it a whole lot more complications. And then call your insurance agent in the first 24 hours, start a claim. As soon as they know, they'll send somebody over there, assist situation, and up front, usually they give you a check to get you started. Say, all right, we know your house is ruined, so you know you're going to get some of this money out of us. So, you know, they give you something, that, you know, I guess if you have a good insurance company, which luckily we did, and they give you some cash up front to help you get started, get you situated. You can go buy some clothes for your family. And then you want to contact any family members that will be affected by this. So if you're living with other family members or family members close by, let the neighbors know if, you know, if they're not home, just so they don't come home, you know, to the shock of, hey, you know, what happened to the house? Is my house okay? And things like that. And then you want to find temporary housing. Find a friend, a family member, you know, that can accommodate you for the first few nights, which is probably the best way to go. That way they can kind of help you out, make you some meals, so that way you don't have to worry about, okay, I got to feed the kids and, you know, take care of this and that. You have a place to stay, and because the stress just through the roof, you know, definitely the first couple of days before it even really sinks in, it's just the overwhelming of emotion and just heartache that you start feeling. And then you want to arrange for utilities to either get canceled or postponed, turn off your cable, electricity, gas, water, sewer, telephone, recycling, garbage. All those things, you want to make sure they get shut off, you know, so that way the sooner you stop paying for a bill, the better off for you. You want to be on site at all times. Hire security if you had to. Have a friend there, like we stated before. Keep a notebook handy so you can write down notes. Keep a timeline of everybody's coming and going, who's there, who's not there, which company's there, everyone who has access to your home, and even better, ask for a copy of their ID before they begin doing any work. So that way, if anything happens, anything disappears, you can go back and take care of this person, need be, later on, because you have their name, you have their information, and you'll be able to take care of that.
Do you think that right there is a big dissuader, I would say, from corrupt behavior, that if every one of those guys that walked in there to do the boarding job, you had stopped them and got their name and their company ID before they walked in that door, that they would have been probably a lot less likely to do what they did on the way out?
Absolutely. If they knew that I had their personal information, I mean, we had the company, and the owner of the company came over the next day, but they just deny everything. You know, they're
of course.
Well, maybe somebody came in through this, you know, little window down there. But, you know, definitely if you have that information ahead of time, they're aware that they can get a hold of this person. And I think that would definitely curb a lot of the, you know, not so innocent people or people that are just trying to take advantage of a quick situation as opposed to the professionals. It'll definitely curb that, you know, having that information up front. And then that way, if you have any legal action, you don't have to go searching for it or research it. You already have it. And then I guess next you want to start the restoration process. Contact your preferred restoration company. There's tons of them out there. There's small companies, big companies. Unfortunately, we went with ServiceMaster, which I actually found a website out there that it's just complaints and complaints and complaints of this company. You know, this is just, I guess I'll throw in my disclaimer that this is not legal written word, and it should only be used as guidance lesson, aggravation of dealing with the issues related to a house fire. I present this advice as in my opinion, and my opinion solely based on my personal experience that my family and I had in dealing with our own burning. So just use this information, you know, I'm just telling my story, my experience, you know, nothing legal about this stuff. And ServiceMaster, I guess, the worst company I guess we could have chosen. I think there might be worse out there, but they definitely have a history of, you know, stuff like this. And I think from what I've gathered and read and spoken with people, it is, I think just globally, it's just the way it is. People in these kind of situations are out there making their money and toss your side, assuming insurance is just going to cover it. And then, you know, start with the dry cleaning. If it's just, you know, if it's completely burned, then less to worry about. But if you have, you know, a lot of smoke damage, the sooner you can take it to your cleaners. We actually use the Sal's dry cleaning, which actually, Service Master, they have all their vendors. So they send it to their preferred dry cleaner, their preferred builders and stuff like that. And this clothes came back. It was just, there's some that came back great, but a lot of it, the chemicals, every single backpack and purse that we had, completely destroyed. It was just, we even had the guy come over and showed him in my son's backpack. He had a little plastic toy phone, and I pulled it out of the pocket, and it was melted. It was that high of heat that they used on the clothes, and it just kind of seems they have no care of what happened. And I mean, so much clothes disappeared. My wife and I, our winter jackets in the middle of February just never came back. You know, and they were put in the same bag with other clothes that came back. So it's just amazing what just disappears. You know, and I understood that some stuff wouldn't come back because, you know, they don't hire, you know, $50 an hour people, you know, to do this dry cleaning and this kind of work. So you expect some stuff to disappear, but it's just overwhelming of how much actually completely disappears. And the same thing goes for Service Master. Like, your items get taken off to get cleaned and they just don't come back. I mean, our washer and dryer never made it back. You know, it's a little hard to miss. Yeah, you know, it didn't get misplaced. It's just gone.
Yeah, how do you lose a washer and dryer? You don't. I mean, some guy named Vinny is selling it on the docks. That's what's going on with things like that.
Absolutely. And actually, that brings me to another topic, or just another point, because, they have electronic restoration companies, and know what you're paying in advance, because luckily about halfway through the electronic cleaning process, I called and say, hey, what does it cost to clean this stuff? You know, and, you know, he quoted, you know, gave me some quotes like, to clean a keyboard was $20. Well, I can buy a brand new one for $12. So sometimes you gotta, you know, make sure you know what you're paying up front, because you'll be paying more to clean something you can just throw away and get another one of. And like the washer and dryer, they would charge $350 a piece, where the dryer was only worth $400 brand new.
Sure.
So, you know, you definitely get to know what you're paying for up front.
On another note, I mean, you mentioned about, you know, preparation in advance of having, like, all your receipts saved and all. But I'm sure there's people out there that have houses full of crap that they bought 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. They have no receipts for at this point. Do you think it's really a good step to go through, and anything of any value, take a picture of it, make a record in a journal entry, get an approximate market replacement price, and kind of keep all of that data safe as well?
Absolutely, because I think one of the biggest things, I guess the most time-consuming things I've had to do is, you know, inventory what we lost. And it made it really difficult to decide, because we actually filed 2 claims. One was for the fire, one's for theft. And to separate the two, I had to know everything I had that came back so I could list, you know, what was taken for theft. So it really made it difficult to, you know, to narrow all that stuff down. Because the insurance company is going to want to know what the item is, you know, your best description, model, make, number, how much you paid for it, and about how long you've had it. Because they do offer, well, what they do is they do the depreciation, but insurance covers replacement costs. And the way that works is, say you bought a computer for $400, and a year later they depreciate it, so now it's worth about $300. So they'll give you $300, but until you come back with a receipt saying you bought a new one for $400, you won't get that at $100. So it will cover replacement cost, but it's kind of like a catch. You get to, you know, provide that you actually bought a new one or replaced that amount worth.
And do you have to do that at a cumulative level? And what I mean is, okay, they depreciate my couch from 1,000 to 600, and they depreciate my computer from 500 to 300. But I go out and I buy a more expensive couch that goes to the full 1,000, but I happen to get a computer for $300. I get a good deal on it. Is like that money move across, or is it item for item? If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm not 100%, but I'd have to say it's item for item.
Okay,
the way they do it,
because
they're going to want a receipt, right?
Okay. So it's not like your total claim and versus your total replacement cost, but item for item. And that seems reasonably fair and makes sense, because I can see situations where, you know, if I find a great computer for $350, that's what I'm going to buy. And then, you know, they say, well, you still have $150 over here, use that. That would be kind of some shenanigans I wouldn't want to deal with. So that's good to know you don't have to deal with that. But, I mean, the big thing I'm getting from all this is be prepared, but you're never really going to be prepared for it.
Exactly, absolutely. I mean, there's just the insurance side alone, you know, if we want to cover that a little bit, is just, you know, make sure you have it. Because if you don't, you literally have nothing. If you're, especially for renters, you know, it costs, I mean, I'm up in New Hampshire, and we're paying like $180 for the year, you know, which is ridiculously cheap when it comes to replacing, you know, everything you own. And, you know, and that insurance covers fires, theft, you know, a lot of times floods, vandalism. So it's not just protection for fire. It's if it disappears, you know, then you're covered for that. Because, I mean, just imagine leaving to work and coming home and that's it. You have nothing left, you know, especially for homeowners. Usually a lot of times their claims are different, where they have a cost for the structural damage. You get replacement for that. And then what they call contents is what they'll list the renters also. So your contents is everything that's not tied down, attached to the building. So the homeowner or the building owner would cover the building, but you're responsible for coverage of your personal items. Everything you moved in with is what that would cover. And you get to put a price tag on that, you know, what it's worth. And like I said earlier, you think you know what it's worth, but it's not even close when it comes time to replacing it.
Absolutely, I can see that. My other thing is you have these two checklists that you were reading off of. Do you think maybe you could make those available and I could make them available as a download for folks?
Absolutely. I just started a website, started putting it up this week. It's called survivethefire.com.
Okay.
And on there, there's a Survive the Fire starter checklist, and I'm still adding to it, so hopefully by the time this goes to audio, it'll be up there. And I'm also working on making a workbook for people. You know, I'm not looking to get rich or anything, just to kind of make it easier. All these checklists will be in there, some, you know, how-to information, what to start looking for, and people can get this book and just start writing. You know, just basically it'll be fill it out, and you'll have the information you need. Make a copy of it, give it to a family member, so that way you'll have it if anything, you know, this does ever happen.
Okay, well, I'll definitely link to that from the show notes. I guess another question I have for you is you are a prepper. You've been a prepper. But a lot of your preps went up in smoke. So it's probably a big setback there. But was at least the prepper mindset helpful in dealing with this?
Yeah, I think definitely, because you kind of, I think once you start prepping, you kind of start simplifying also. So, you know, we had just gotten a ton of bins to just, you know, kind of organize and straighten things out. You know, I had started some, like you said, basically everything went in smoke. You know, any of the food I had, because being in an apartment, couldn't really bury it, you know, under the sidewalk, so whatever I had in there, and that brings another point. Anything, any food, you can't use over. Anything biscuit, anything chemical based, just not necessarily the toxins, but the heat changes the chemistry of like makeup and things like that, you know, so those are pretty much all gone, you know, so food, makeup, anything plastic. I've been trying to find research out there where studies have done, you know, what's actually salvageable, what's not salvageable, and there's almost next to nothing. So I don't know if any listeners out there who have information on that, you know, I'd definitely love to contact me. I would love to throw that in my workbook and, you know, give people some definite answers as far as what's salvageable and what's not.
It seems like most prescription medications would be gone as well. So, I mean, what I'm hearing here is a whole new case for if you have the means to have some level of your preps outside of your structure that you live in. Because if that is compromised, that'd be a time when you need it the most and it's gone then with the structure. Like my wife said during the Haitian earthquake, if all of those people had been preppers, it wouldn't have mattered much for them, because when, you know, 4 tons of cinder block fall down on your stuff, or in your case, a fire burns it up, it's just as good as not there. So it seems like if there's any way you can make allowances for that, and I mean, this is a case where people start to look at, you know, maybe even a small storage unit for some people that don't have any other means makes sense.
Absolutely, and you know, if you can climate control those storage units, even better, because, you know, we get hot summers and cold winters, and you know, that definitely changes the chemistry in just paper, you know, and items like that. And like I stated before, a really good fire and waterproof safe is, is definitely more than indispensable. It's just going to save so much. It really does. And as far as other contents on insurance, actually, I just wanted to cover this also, is make sure you have enough coverage for what you own, because taxes go up, the price of homes go up and down. So you want to make sure that you have enough insurance, because even the home has a limit as far as what's covered. So you want to make sure you have enough that covers the price of your home as well as the contents of your home. A lot of policies only give you like $2,000, $2,500 for firearms, jewelry, furniture, clothes. So there's a lot of little limitations in there you want to make sure you're aware of with your insurance policy. So that way you have, the insurance coverage if you need it for those items. And one of the biggest things I got burned on is currency. They all have limits on their currency. If you don't have it, or I guess receipts for it, even if it's foreign dollars, silver coins, cash, the limit was $200. So if you had $2,000 worth of currency, that got stolen, then you're only getting $200 back for that. And that kind of hits home with making sure you put them in the right place, put them in your safe,
Your fire safe definitely is where your cash needs to be. Or if it's not in your purse, it's on your person or in your pockets, it should be in your fire safe. It's anything more than $100. Especially, I know a lot of you guys out there are investing in silver and gold. And if you have that in a cigar box under your bed or something like that, you are wrong. First of all, it melts really easily, and second of all, it's a lot easier to steal when it's not in a great big honking box that's heavy and weighed down. And so I definitely think that that's something people need to consider. And I also tell you, all this documentation that Mark's talking about, it makes sense. Like, documentation today, it's not like the old days where you had to go find somebody with a copy machine. Like, do we all have computers and printers? Duplicate it and throw a copy of it in if you have a safe deposit box in your bank safe deposit box. There's in the data storage industry, the only true backup is an offsite backup. Because if the facility collapses, then you lose the data. And I think we need to take some lessons from that. I mean, you'd probably agree with that after going through all this.
Yeah, absolutely. Luckily, I grabbed the laptop, when I left, but I always keep it's just a USB drive. And anything important, I put on there and actually leave it at work. So that way, if anything happens at either place, I have the information if I need it.
Yeah, I mean, it also makes me think that maybe, reconsidering options like Carbonite data backup and stuff like that as well might make a lot of sense, just for like all the pictures that you have on a computer or something like that. There's a lot of people that's where all their pictures are, is on their computer. And if they haven't put them on Facebook or something like that, there's no backups. And maybe they put them on a CD, but if that CD's in a drawer where the computer's sitting on top of it, again, all that data is lost.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being in the IT field, and handling backups on a regular basis, there's so many friends I have, hey, can you get this information off? And sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. And as far as CDs go, like any CDs or DVDs that even touch the toxic smoke in our house, they kind of started peeling away on the plastic, so even those are unusable. And you definitely want to make sure you have it off-site somewhere, even if it's, in your brother's underwear drawer or something. You definitely want a copy of it somewhere else.
Well, I wish that you had learned these lessons a little bit easier of a way, man, and didn't have to go through all this crap. I'm never fully amazed, but I'm always dismayed by how low some forms of life with two legs and two arms actually are to victimize somebody in a situation like you were in. But I do appreciate you coming on the show and sharing this with everybody.
Jack, it's been my pleasure. I've been wanting to do this, for quite a while now. I've sent you a few emails on it, probably hounded you for a little bit, but I just definitely want to get this information out there because there is none. I tried finding this information myself, and there's really nothing out there, that can help you get ready for the people that are just waiting to steal from you, kick you while you're down, so to speak. And you just want to avoid being burned twice. It's first time, shame on, shame on them. Second time, shame on you. But if, as far as preppers go and the preppers' mindset, I knew they could benefit from this kind of information up front.
Well, and I think every once in a while we need to kind of back up from the apocalyptic doomsday, survive the collapse scenarios in the Mel Gibson Road Warrior world and get back to the concept that, one of the concepts this show is founded on is the least number of people affected by a given disaster, the more likely it is to happen to you. And in your case, it was you and your family, and I mean, your neighbors probably felt for you and all, but their house didn't burn down and they didn't have to file insurance and they went on with their lives. They may have felt bad for you, but that's probably the extent of how it impacted them, other than complaining about the crew and their rebuilding stuff making noise. So that individual disaster is the most likely thing that we're all going to face. And I think a lot of the things that you brought up today have redundancies that would go into other individual disasters, whether it's a storm, whether it's an earthquake, whether it's just pure theft. I think that a theft claim would have many of the same issues. If somebody, you went on vacation for a week and came back and all your stuff's either destroyed or stolen, you don't have to rebuild the house now, but you're going to have a lot of the same trials.
Absolutely. I mean, there's just, like I said, there's just so many little things that wiggle in there and just, you know, wreak havoc on your life. You know, you think things are getting a little better and then something else happens and it just, you know, keeps going downhill and downhill for quite a while. You know, luckily I think we're on the upswing now after a good, you know, 7 months of this. And, but it's definitely taking its toll on all of us. You know, it's getting, you know, you don't think about it, but emotionally, like, you have a hard time trusting people now.
Sure.
You know, we just spent the week at Dave Canterbury's gathering, and luckily, you know, everybody there kind of like the same mindset of you, so that really helped show us that, you know, there are nice people out there, you know, but they're still, you're just very wary of everyone you come in contact with now, that, you know, what do they want from me? What are they trying to take from me? You know, because you are at a low point in your life, and somebody just stepped right over you, like they didn't even care. Looked you right in the face and said, yep, yep, and then turned around and just lied right to you. You know, and it's just hard to get past that feeling.
Yeah, and it's got to be difficult because I know I hate being that way. I'm a very trusting person despite the industry that I'm in, you know, where you think of the person as being generally paranoid. But I try to trust everybody I can until they give me a reason not to. But I guess it's when you're at your weakest that you need to be your most vigilant. And like I said, it does kind of surprise me on some levels, but on other levels, I'm like, yeah, that's how it is. I remember we had a very, very strong tornado move through South Arlington area back in 1998 or 99, the one that kind of blew up the Bank One building in downtown Fort Worth. And the police departments had to camp out on the streets because as soon as the damn thing was through the town, there were people looking to move in and take stuff. And this was a nice neighborhood. This, you know, it was a half a mile from my house where these houses were leveled. And it's shocking on some levels, but par for the course on others, that right in the middle of that type of disaster, there are people that will go and take from someone who's already lost everything.
Right, absolutely. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, people out there, you know, they're honest by nature, you know, honest most of the time, but you give them that one opportunity where they have a chance to not be honest, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, they'll take that advantage.
It's a shame. Just kind of one more thing to wrap up with. As you're rebuilding your house, are you guys doing anything from a fire prevention standpoint that maybe you wouldn't have thought of before, sprinklers or fire retardants or anything like that?
Yeah, we're definitely going to be putting some surveillance systems in there for sure off the start, you know, monitoring the driveway and the house itself. I do believe sprinkler systems are going in there. You know, one thing you got to be aware of is codes change now. You know, it's been 20 years since the house was rebuilt.
Sure.
Actually, the city made us keep the foundation, so we had to actually have the foundation restored just because of the small lot size. You know, they couldn't do change to that. You know, roof requirements are different. Stair requirements are different. So, you know, you definitely go through a whole nother process of rebuilding, you know, just because of the new codes and stuff like that being in the city. I guess out in the country, it's probably maybe not as thick, but I'm sure they get their codes also you got to be aware of.
Sure. It all depends on how far out you live and how many codes you have to deal with. But I can tell you, even living out in rural county areas, there are certain things that are very strictly enforced with code. And in some ways, it's busybodies, but in some ways, it's people trying to prevent what happened to you from happening to somebody else. So there's good and bad with that. Well, Mark, hey, I appreciate you coming on the show. Again, folks, the website Mark set up is called survivethefire.com, and we'll link to it from today's show notes. Mark, you got any final thoughts for folks here as we wrap up today?
If anybody has any questions, I have an email on there, you know, shoot them off to me. I'd love to hear your story, anybody or knows anybody who's been through this. I think a big part of it for us was, you know, I've never even heard or known anyone have a house fire till this happened. So if other people have stories out there, you know, I'd love to hear what their story is, you know, just to, I guess, create more research for me. You know, and I wish everybody well, and hopefully, you know, you never have to go through this. And if it does happen to you, please contact me, and I'll try to help you out as best I can.
All right, Mark. Well, thanks for sharing all that, and thanks for being so open and honest and sharing, you know, the good and the bad and some things that were probably tough to go back through. We appreciate you for it.
You're welcome, Jack. Thank you.
All right, folks, and with that, this has been Jack Spirico today along with Mark Holly, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Survival Podcast, Friday Flashbacks. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider becoming an MSB member. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on Members to learn more. You can also support our show by going to T-Spaz, that's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com, anytime you shop online. And while you'll support us, no matter what you buy, you will find over 500 reviews of items I have personally tested and vouched for. And to stay in touch with us and never miss anything, follow our channel or our group on Telegram. You can find links to that and all our social media options. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and check the show notes for any episode.